You are listening to Affirmations for Living with Edvige, where each week you're invited to join in our upbeat discussion as we look deeper into spiritually based principles that can change your life. We know that change can open doorways to new beginnings, and we are dedicated to helping you make the changes needed to improve your life. And now, here is your host, Reverend Dr. Edvige. Hello, everyone, and welcome in. I am Dr. Edvige. I am so happy to be here today. I want to let you know how much you are loved and appreciated for tuning in, because I know you have made the choice to be here in this moment. And that's really important that we begin to pay attention to the choices that we make each and every moment. It is my goal, my desire, to bring you week-to-week tools to empower, uplift, and inspire you to be the best that you can be, and to help you take control of your life, to understand that everything you are experiencing is because you are creating it, consciously or unconsciously. So together, we can begin to create the life that you truly want. And of course, if you like what you hear, tell your friends, because it doesn't help if no one's listening. So please tell your friends, spread the word. And together we can truly make a difference. If you haven't already been to my website, it is affirmationsforliving.net. And of course, you can download my free app if you have a smartphone. That's called Awakened. And that's AWAKENED. And of course, you know, I recently released my first book, You're Not Crazy, You're Awakening. And that journals my experience of awakening firsthand, along with all of the tools that were given to me to help me in that process. So I would invite you to go to Amazon or Barnes & Noble and get that today. So today is a special day. I've been following this guest for a little bit. He is a spiritual prophecy we're going to be talking about, and so much more, with Dr. Delbert Blair. He's internationally known master metaphysician. He's a lecturer, a historian, a scientist, spiritual and alternative healing consultant. In these times that we're living in, how do we determine what path of evolution we take in our everyday living? So Dr. Blair is the founder of the Meta Center in Chicago, and he is considered a leader in the area of metaphysics research and alternative information. And I think that's where we're going to really focus today, that alternative information that, you know, you have to dig deep to find out about. And he has dedicated himself to the awakening of mankind for, goodness, about 5 decades. So I really invite you to call in today with your questions. That number is 888-627-6008. Again, that's 888-627-6008. So without further delay, Dr. Blair, are you there?
I think I'm here. Sometimes I wonder if I'm all here. But the party is not frozen out for being in Chicago. Is still here. I'm telling you, this has been some kind of weather.
Wow. I'm glad I'm more west than that, so I don't have to experience that. That's why I left New Jersey.
Don't rub it in. You want an immigration? I am immigration, believe me. But anyway, it's always a pleasure. I look forward to being on your show, and I look forward to your audience, which I know has got to be sophisticated, and one thing, at least warm.
Exactly. So, Dr. Blair, before we get started in all of what's going on globally, tell our audience who you are, because that history is so interesting. So how did you begin in the metaphysical world?
How did I begin in the metaphysical world? I think I was born into the metaphysical world. I remember, and I don't know whether it's being redundant with you or what you're asking, and so first thing comes to mind is when I had recollections when I was in diapers, literally when I was sitting, just able to begin to sit up without falling over. I used to always have buddies around. When I was would go out outside, and he wouldn't keep me out too long. I'd see things in trees. That grew to sitting in my high chair when I guess I was about one and a half, something like that, too. And I talked to clouds that were in the kitchen. And the clouds had faces in them, and we had conversations. And I remember there was a makeshift bedroom we had that used to be like a dining room, and it had a breakfast. There was a mirror in it. And from the kitchen, when they faced my high chair a certain way, I could look into this mirror. And I remember sometimes I'd look into the mirror and see myself and reflection. Sometimes I'd look and see a different scene. Well, later on, I found out you didn't talk to clouds in the room in kitchens. You didn't see reflections like that because grown-ups didn't like that. And when you did, you either got chastised, looked at, or whatever. So as I began to be aware of this and that it was something different, then I began to lose the power to do it. So I think I was born metaphysically. Having studied since that time, I not only know, I think, why I was born, where I came from, and all of that. But at that time, it's just that I knew that some things were happening you didn't talk about because grown-ups didn't like when you did that. From that point on, I had a turning point, and I'll make this very brief unless you want to really elongate and extend it. In 1960, I was in college, and I was always studying about UFOs and things, and I've had, I used to draw spaceships. What got me was the spaceships I drew didn't have a lot of plume and smoke. They had more or less kind of energy field around it. And everything I was reading and so had plume and smoke, rockets and stuff like this. But I remember I didn't draw rockets. And in 60, I went to a symposium with a man by the name of George Adamski was supposed to appear. It was like what we call at that time one of the few or first psychic fairs. I didn't realize a psychic fair meant that you had psychics there and stuff like this. I thought it was featuring this George Adamski man who I had read part of a book from. It was called Flying Saucers Have Landed. And it was a foreword by a person by the name of Desmond Leslie. Then another one they put out later on was called Inside the Spaceships. Well, of all the books and things I'd been reading, these two grabbed me because it said so much about what I wanted to believe in but had never seen, flying saucers, intergalactic travel, all these kind of things. So I said, when this man comes to town, I'm going to see him. I was on a scholarship and then later a fellowship, but it didn't give me a lot of extra money. So by the time they paid my rent and paid my tuition and so on like that, I had very little extra money, and I was studying like a mad person trying to get out of school. Long story short, I went down. I thought it was on a Friday. Went down on a Friday night, found out that the speaker was not going to be there till the next night, and it took all my little change to get out in town to meet it. From that, I actually barged in on a interview when I saw. I waited around, and this guy started coming in. It was about 11:45. I said, well, maybe I get a chance to talk with him. Anyway, I barged in on an interview, and I was already in the hotel, so I came out of a side stairway-like. Well, what I wasn't thinking was this guy was a noted person. He had his own bodyguards. He was interviewed by the press, and I was already in the hotel. And of all things, I think I must have been the only black person at that interview. And I come out of the side drapery window, going to sit in on it, and then it hit me after I did it. I said, oh, you crazy fool. I come through these curtains from the outside. Nobody saw me come up on the elevator, and here I go going to talk to him. I said, okay, I'm dead. He's going to hit me, beat me up, or something else. Anyway, he looked over as these gendarmes or these two bodyguards were coming over. He looked over and he said, that's okay, I know him. Well, I never met the man in his life. He was white, I was black. He was older, I was younger. And I said, well, I guess somebody must look out for me. It wound up, I wound up speaking with the man out on the mezzanine there from the interview. He didn't get to about 11:45. We went from about 12:45 till sun came up. He didn't know me, I didn't know him. But we got into engrossed conversation. He was telling me about the various things that had happened and so on and so forth again. So, at any rate, I said, well, thank you very much. I appreciate it. He said, you have to come back the next night and see when I clear house. I said, what do you mean clear house? He said, they follow me all around, Blair. He said, you know, these triple agencies, triple alphabet agencies. Well, the only thing I knew about that time was OSS, and the triple alphabet agency I didn't know. And, of course, I knew about J. Edgar Hoover and so on and so forth. But anyway, he went on to talk about that. He said, when I clean house, I'm going to ask them, why do they follow me all around if I'm not saying anything? Why do they spend all this money and stuff? Well, I said, well, I can't come back. And anyway, he put me on the list. I didn't have to pay when I came back in. the next night. I had just gotten married, and I was telling my wife, you got to come, you got to come. Of course, she didn't. That's why she was my ex-wife after a while. But at the time, we were both in school. I was interested in these fascinating subjects of UFOs and things like that. She wasn't. But at any rate, I came back the next night by myself, as usual, and there were about 350 people there. He gave his talk, and then afterwards, since I had spent so much time with him, when everybody was mobbing him for his autographs and all like this, I looked over where there was a young lady that had been with him the night before, came in with him. He introduced us by first name only, and then during the night, I guess she must have said maybe about 30 words only, but obviously she sat in on it. So she was standing by the doorway to the hobby. So I was looking at her. Then I looked around, and there were two other black guys there. And out of 350 people, the only two black guys were those two guys and myself. So I'm saying, oh, maybe they live in my neighborhood. Hey, I finally got some guys I can go talk to. So I'm running over. I was saying the word brother at that time. I still do, but anyway, I said, well, hey, brothers, you know, so and so. Well, the guy, I extended my hand to shake his hand and nodded to the other guy. This guy looks at me almost like in disdain. He was about six. I grew 2 inches. He was about 6'2", and the guy with him was about 5'6". So both of them looked at me like I wasn't talking to them. And I told him, I said, hey, brother. So I said, oh, my God, I got me some funnies here. And only three of us down here, and we're going to act like this. So I said, okay. So I said, well, I looked over and saw his friend. So I motioned to her. She said, come on over. And long story short, as I went over to her, and I said it was okay to come over, she said yes. So I said, well, you know, I took up a lot of time with Mr. Adamski, but I know that you have some questions I can ask you, too. She said, well, sure, we can talk. So then as we started to talk, I'm always aware of my situations, and she was looking past me. So I'm saying, well, I'm talking to her, but she's looking past me. So I turn around. Here come these two black guys over. I said, oh, my God. And what do they want to do over here? You know, these crazy guys. So I'm telling her, you know, I said, well, I turn back around and look at her. I said, I don't want to. She nods and walks off. So then I'm saying, what in the heck is going on? So at any rate, they come over. By this time, and at that time, I was very brash. And, you know, and by this time, my feelings are hurt completely. I'm frustrated to sleep. So then this guy comes over and he said, you're Blair. And I didn't say anything. He said, well, I said, yeah, man. Now you ought to know my name, huh? He said, well, yes. I said, well, man, when I hung up my, you know, I'm trying to speak to you before, you act like I wasn't there. I said, it's okay, you can go on back to Mr. Adamski. He said, no. He said, we came a long way to see you. And we thought that you were one of the ones was up there by him. Then he pointed out and said, no, you were over here. I said, well, whether he said it or not, I said, somebody sends their hand out to you, at least you can shake it. I said, I don't want to say to you. I said, you guys going to pass for something? I said, so I'm talking to a white woman now, so now you're going to come over and talk to him. I was Bryce. So anyway, the guy said, look, I said, calm down. I said, we made a mistake, came a long way to see you. You'd be surprised. And any question you have, we will answer. So I really got my horse. Well, we started talking, and we were standing right by this doorway. It's a big auditorium, and as I say, the people began to file out, but we were standing there talking. So one of the questions I asked him, I said, what was time? And he began to answer some questions. I said, this guy has got some smart. Maybe he's just kind of stuck up on himself or something. And then something else happened. And then he said, well, you remember you asked me about time? I said, yes. He said, well, look around you. So I'm looking around you, and all of these people, the guy's turning out the lights in the auditorium. Well, it looked like I just started a conversation. So I'm saying, wow, and we're new. So all these people had to file out by me because we were by the doorway to go out to this elevator. And I'm saying, I'm so engrossed in this conversation, I didn't see 300 people go by me. And I'm saying, Blair, this is not like you. I said, well, whatever, this is very interesting. So we went out to the elevator, and as we're going out, and we were the last 10 or 15 people leaving, so I'm still trying to get over how I lost that much time as people fired up before me. This little guy goes running over to the elevator operator. Well, this is one of those old handheld elevators. I don't know if you've seen them or not, where, you know, you have a throttle like, and it goes back and forth. It's not automatic again, and it was a woman who was driving it. So he's running up to this woman. He says, oh, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. I'm saying, what the heck is going on here? So we get on it, and then we went down a couple of floors. I think we were on the third floor or something like that. And we get off, and something said, don't you think you ought to ask this woman why he was so sorry, because these guys are kind of strange. And don't, I said to myself, yeah, I said, hold on, fellas, I want to talk to this woman a minute. So I went back over. I said, I just met these guys. She was a black elevator operator. They were black and I was black. Almost everything around otherwise was white. So I'm saying, what happened? They said, what was he so sorry about? She says, it was nothing. I said, look, I just met these guys. They're kind of out the box. And I want to know what he was sorry about. What did he do? He said, well, it was kind of strange. He said, they got on. And this is a 9-floor hotel. It's a 10-floor, but nobody goes to the 10th floor. And there was a church meeting on the 8th floor and this UFO meeting on the 3rd floor. Mm-hmm. So when they got on, they said, most of black people don't go to UFOs things, so I figured they were going up to the church thing. So I went past that, and as I went past it, the taller guy said, you know, no, miss, we got to get off here. So she says, oh, and said, I kind of eased the elevator, but it kind of jumped a little bit. So when it jumped a little bit, it kind of made one of the guys that was in there fall back against the other one. And in other words, and then when I leveled it off, and he says, he made the N-word, you know, all you in people, can't get it together, so on and so forth. And that. Well, she said, when he said that, said the little guy, he said, I don't know how he did that yet. She said, I'm still trying to figure out. Said he was on one, I mean, it's a little elevator, but anyway, he said, it's like almost he hovered. He said he went over there, and it was like he was up at his face, and he was right in front, and he had to move past three people to get there. And he did it so fast, she said, I didn't know. And it startled the man. Said the man kind of fell back again against the other guy. And so that, so the, so anyway, they got off, and that was what he was sorry about, because twice then he had made her kind of maybe jeopardize her job by stopping the elevator too fast and too slow. Mm-hmm. After that, and I'll try to end this up in the next 3 or 4 minutes, but it was a turning point, and that's why I have to include that. So I got back up there again, and this guy had a voice something like mine, but even more powerful. He was talking kind of loud, and it was a Saturday night. It was downtown Chicago. But there weren't a lot of people coming and going, and the conversation could be heard. And the kind of things we were talking about, I said, I better kind of go out. We'll stand right outside. It was a fall day, but it was not. It was pretty warm. We had jackets and all. I said, I'm going to stand right out here in the street. Downtown Chicago on a Saturday night is loaded, so we can just talk right here, and therefore, you know, and it's warm enough. So I started talk with him. I asked him, what was a Negro? And he said, there's no such thing as a Negro. It's Negro. He said, it's in, and they put a hyphen over to dissuade or to fool you. I said, what do you mean? He says, well, look up Negro. You'll find Negro means necrophile, necrophilia. Well, there's a whole dictionary full of necrophiles. It means the lost, the dead, the unknowing, so on and so forth like that. I asked him everything I was asking him. The deeper I asked it, the more he just popped these answers out, which to me seemed a lot of logical. And I said, well, he said a little bit later, I said, I will show you what a Negro is. I said, a little bit later, you show me the Negro. I said, yeah, okay. So anyway, we were talking about some other things. And then I remember saying, this guy is smart. And I may have bit off something. I said, I'm going to stop asking these stupid questions. I'm going to get to the deepest questions I can start thinking of. And he answered that. And I said, okay, I'm not going to ask that silly question because I'm going to think of something else. And he answered that. And then it hit me. I said, I didn't ask you that. I was thinking that. I said, I didn't ask you that because I thought it was too trite. And you answered, I said, man, are you reading my mind? And I said something else, and he answered the question that I was forming in my mind as I formed it. Well, that freaked me out. I said, whoa, what are you? Who are you? What the heck is all this going? And about that time, we hear a ho, ho, hey, hey. Here comes around the corner about 6 Negroes. They were all juveniles. Well, they were teenagers at that time. And they had come around the corner downtown, the worst dressed, making more noise than anybody else in the street. And I said, how did you know 15 to 20 minutes ago there was a bunch of Negroes going to come around the corner? He just smiled. The other guy just smiled, didn't say anything. So I'm saying, man, Blair, you are out of your league. What the heck are you in here now? What's happening with this mess? So I remember the little guy asked him, he said, I'm hungry. So the guy had his little jacket on. It's like he pulled up his sleeve to look at the time, you know, because he wanted to check the time. But when he pulled up his sleeve, I saw something on his wrist. I don't know what the heck it was. It was blinking. Lights were going around on it, twirled with a big case on it. I said, what the heck is that? It's like he had forgotten and kind of pulled it down right quick. And he said, that's the chronometer. And I remember I said, oh, yeah, I got one of those on my dresser at the house. I said, what is that, man? He said, "Well, it doesn't matter." And so I said, I don't have a watch like that. I've never seen one like that. So anyway, a few more things were said. And again, he showed his mind reading capability. And I said, "Well," I said, "I guess I shouldn't ask you, can I come by and visit you sometime? And you can look at my book collection. May I look at yours?" He said, "You already know that answer." And I said, "Well, who are you? What is going on?" He said, "I'm somebody that was sent to answer your question. Mr. Adamski requested it and thought enough of you, and we thought enough of you to come and answer your question." I said, "Well, that's very good. Now, I guess can I get your phone number?" And so like that. He said, "You already know that answer." I said, "Well, look," he said, "do you have any other questions? Does that suffice?" I said, "Well, one thing," I said, "I've never seen a UFO. Mr. Adamski talked about seeing a UFO. I came down here and I saw a picture that he showed about a minute clip of UFOs over Lubbock, Texas." I said, "But man, you know," I said, "well," he said, "well, just look at the sky." I said, "I've been looking at the sky," and I said, "I don't even see stars." I was being sarcastic again. He says, "Well, just keep watching the sky." I said, "That's it then, huh?" He said, "Well, you had your questions answered, right?" I said, "Yes." He said, "Well, it's getting late. We're going to have to run." And I said, "Well, will I ever see you again?" He says, "I doubt it." I said, "Will I see him?" He said, "You may, but I doubt it." And I said, "So that's where it's going to be left?" He said, "Well, you had your questions answered." I said, "Not all of them." He said, "Well, I think you had enough answered." And that was it. So with that one, they turned around and they walked on down the street. And so I think at that time, Dr. Noah, something was just coming out in the movies I'd seen. I said, "This is a crowded downtown Chicago. I'm going to follow these guys. I'm going to see where they go. So enough people where I can even get on the other side of the street and I can still follow them." And he said, my mind said, "Don't even think about it." And so I'm saying, "Okay, I'm going to follow these guys," so on and so forth. And in my mind again, "Don't even think about it." And I'm looking at the back of these guys. This guy's got his back to me, walking down the street, communicating in my mind, telling me not even think about following him. And with that one, I said, "I'm out of my league. I don't know what the heck this is about." So I left. Well, that was a Saturday night. I was going to University of Chicago at the time. They had what they call registering the library, and I had to go do some studying. So that Tuesday night, I was coming back from the library, and I'm looking up in the sky, and it looked like I saw three stars move. Well, as I said before, I had seen stars, of course, but nothing ever moved me too much. I didn't even see meteors or comets or nothing. And it looked like all three of these stars were moving in sequence. I said, "No," I took off my glasses because I wore glasses that time, not so thick. And anyway, the stars were moving, and I was living in a place called the Quads, and it's in University of Chicago. And what it was, it's like it has a English basement, if you're familiar with that one, and a parapet wall, and the streets were very narrow, which meant that it's like a four-story building with a parapet. So the way they were traveling, when they went over this parapet, I wouldn't be able to see them. They were not traveling very fast, but they were not traveling very slow. So I said, "Doggone it, when I finally get a chance to see these daggone things, it's going to be over." So I had a choice of running back to the corner, which I was halfway in the middle of the block, running down to the alley and coming in the back to see if I could still see them. I said, "The fastest way is to go up the steps." So I'm taking two steps at a time. I ring the bell as I'm getting out my keys. So anyway, I jump up. I was on the second floor. I must have made two steps. The rest of that time, I was almost floating. So I told my wife, I said, "Follow me, follow me, follow me." We run down this long hall back to the porch. She said, "What's wrong?" I said, "Just follow me." We ran out on the porch, and I thought I was going to see them in the distance. The daggone things had stopped. And there was three of them. They were no more than 900 or 1,000 feet in the air, very bright. But you couldn't see them because they had set up an energy field around them. It was different lights. It was red and yellow and green and stuff like this, and they were evenly spaced in a line. So I'm looking at this. I said, "My God," and I never will forget that. Wife looked up. She says, "What have you done now? I don't see this. I'm not part of this." And she turned around and ran the house and slammed the screen door, almost knocked the paint out of it. And I said, "Well, one thing, whatever I'm illusioning, she's illusioning too, so at least I got substantiation." And then I went to about 25 minutes of just pure joy. The first one just lit up and went. It was like it lit up and then it was gone. It was in a straight line. I'm saying, "Okay, I come out here now. Now you're going to play. Now you see it. Now you don't." I said, "So okay, now they're going to zoom on off." So I'm watching again. And then the other one on the other flank on that, the one in the middle just stayed there. The other one began to go like stair steps and turning around, like a zigzag, stair steps, turning around. That thing must have gone on for at least, I guess, 12 or 13 minutes, just slowly climbing and zigzagging and sort of like that going off to the other end. So one went north, one went south. as soon as this other one faded out, then the one in the middle began to fade out too. Well, what it was going up and out. And so I'm looking at this, I said, whoa. So what happened was it showed me three means of aerodynamic lift. One, now you see it, now you don't. The other, stair steps, and the other, you can just fade out and go up. Well, of course, after that, that changed my whole life. And from that time on, I say about almost every year, something different has happened in my life. I'm not going to take a lot of time with that one, but I have been through some amazing events, having my life saved, so on and so forth again, going down a highway and could have had an accident and avoided it supernaturally. So that was a turning point. And, of course, once you go through that, nothing that they were teaching me in school interested me, because I wanted to fly a saucer. I wanted to read somebody's mind. I wanted to levitate.
Exactly.
And I didn't know any school teaching that. And since these were black guys doing it, you know, that's what I said. Where can I go to learn to do what they're doing, and what in the world has happened? So after that, obviously, my whole life changed. And you can imagine, director of a center now, but at that time when I graduated, I wanted to be a minister, or I wanted to be a professor of history. Well, I got into both of those, but always on the fringes was this talk about UFOs. And, of course, if that happens to you and you had a high chair upbringing, too, you'd be a changed person, too. So I must say I'm more level-headed now than I was before, but everything in my life has been way out. So that's the whole story.
Wow, fascinating indeed. So, see, now what's wonderful about that, you've had the actual happening of seeing the UFOs. And so it's easy to believe once you see it. And so for anyone listening, here is the proof. They truly do exist. Beyond any shadow of any doubt, they do exist. We are not alone. And clearly, that's an important message to get out there. We are not alone. So did they answer your question, what is time?
Yeah, let me add one more thing, too. And they have black people connected with UFOs, maybe even parties in them. That's what I never hear. Every time I hear all of these hundreds of people interviewed, never any about black people in UFOs at all. I had that privilege. So that's another thing that let me know, too, that there are very interesting black people with a lot of different kind of powers that aren't talked about.
Well, that's so true, you know, and these races or the ET species, there's everything. I've seen blue beings. I've seen all different color beings. And so I know that they exist in a plethora of colors. So because I've had the experience of seeing them firsthand myself. And so, yeah, it's quite interesting, to say the least. We do exist in other realms, in other worlds. So back to that question, what is time?
That's what you're asking me now, what is time?
Mm-hmm.
The only thing I can see of time is a sequence or a slowed-down picture frame in a sequence that's going by, like on a tape. That time is relative to the energy field that you're within. You know, most of the time now they teach linear progression here and linear travel. You go from one point to another. You leave your house, you walk to your car, or you walk to the store, or you run, or you drive somewhere at point A, point B. And, of course, that's what's called that. By enfolding that, there's another way of travel, and that's that you stay in one spot and vibrate. And if you vibrate slow or fast, you're now traveling through time, because your vibrations is another means of travel. So although we're taught linear travel only, there seems to be vibratory rates, and this seems to be what the cosmos is made of, not just linear, but staying in one spot, vibrating faster or slower. And as you do this, you're now actually exuding time or using time or exuding time. It's hard to say what you're doing. But it's like, again, you know, I think we said once before when I did your interview, I'm not sure, that it's like people will tell you all the time, you know, where's your mind? And they'll say, man or girl, or so, your mind's a million miles away. And they say, sure it was. Well, what did they just say? They just said that your mind is capable of being a million miles away, not concentrating where you are. And the person usually says, yes, it sure was. Or they ought to, sometimes they'll say, put your mind to it. Which means, again, that this mind, which seems to be the vehicle for the spirit body or the soul, just as the brain is a vehicle for the physical body, this seems to be able to alter time, because the mind is limitless, and I think, in a sense, we're in somebody's mind anyway. So I would say time is the relative of, is the partition or the secularization of travel of mind to matter, and time is relative to the vibration of that matter and wherever it is that you set your mind. That's the only thing I can kind of see to it.
Well, So now, when we spoke before and we were figuring out what we wanted to discuss in this hour, you offered some information that you wanted to talk about as far as what's going on right now that's vitally important that we know. And so, would you share that with us?
Well, so much is important that we know. I'm going to do a teleconference myself on Saturday, in which the whole subject is going to be weather.
Of
So I don't
course, it's
want to
snowing there,
get
right?
yeah. So of course I don't want to get too much into that now because I'm going to be getting very, 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 very deeply into that on Saturday. So avoiding that one, I would say it's a matter now of trying to understand what is happening on our planet. Why is it now that as we begin this year, not only is the weather all messed up, but people are beginning to see things more. They're beginning to get all kind of consciousnesses again. They're beginning to find out that there's the viruses that are happening now. They got this H7N1 bird virus around. They're telling people to go get these flu shots. They found now that there's DDT, which used to be something they used in World War II when they traveled to these islands to kill off the bugs and things so they could grow up. But now they're finding out that there are dangerous amounts of DDT beginning to be found in the elderly. They also understand now, too, that there are 1.2 billion people, 1.2 billion people, hear what I said, not me, and billion people again, around the world that own smartphones. And less than 2% of them, probably I see 1% of them, have diodes or any other protective devices on them. That amazed me. And that amazes me because that means that one of the chief killing weapons or making you sick weapons we have is not a weapon, but it's a smartphone. So therefore, I consider a smartphone a weapon. Why? Because these smartphones, if 1.2 billion people have them, and less than 1% have any protective devices on it, that means these people are being exposed to raw radiation. Radiation out of sequence will age you, pickles the thymus gland, which is your gland of youth. Radiation, again, can cause all kind of cancer cells and alteration of cells. And nobody seems to give it any trouble. I mean, seems to give it any sense. These things cause a lot of trouble. And so, as you know, I got very heavy into all these electronic things we have that propagate ELF, extra low frequencies. And one of the worst things are these daggone cell phones. And in fact, these smartphones are not even phones anymore. They are computers. And as you know, you can do everything with these smartphones that you can with a computer, and some things now even beyond a computer. For instance, you can type into your cell phone and say, I want to see Epsilon Bootay or Mare Crisium or Pegasus or someplace, which means you want to see a distant galaxy or you want to see a crater on the moon. That thing will either take a picture or give you a file copy, beam it right down to you. You're holding on to this thing with your left hand. You got your other hand enlarging and scrolling, which means you now have a direct radiation beam from an orbiting satellite. You do that for 6 months' time and see if you don't have cancer cells or something else. So again, the things we take for granted now can be very dangerous when you compile that with the use of not just cell phones, but computers. You have microwave ovens. You have MP3 players. You have television sets. You've got wireless routers. You've got video game stations. You got X-ray equipment. You got washers and dryers. These washers and dryers on that spin thing, that's emitting also an energy field, if you would. You've got fluorescent lights. This is another thing. Fluorescent lights are very interesting. And most of the time, the light bulbs we have are luminous light bulbs. They're cutting out now. They're phasing out. This time next year, you remember what I told you on your show and your audience. They're phasing out the regular luminescent light bulbs, and they're getting these coiled light bulbs out. Well, these coiled light bulbs, including the neon lights also, are above your head. People never think about looking up above their head. On the top of your head is your pineal gland, your hemispheres, your two lobes there again. This stuff is shining right down on the top of your head. Not only can it cause hair loss, but you're being radiated. And these daggone coil things have mercury in them. So now you're getting mercury vapors constantly being absorbed by your body. And if they're going to phase out the other one, we're going to be in a mercury lamp. Mercury is a deadly poison. and can come in a liquid or a card form. Why in the world would somebody just invent these? And what I keep asking myself is, why are all these inventions very detrimental, and the ones that aren't detrimental, they're being obsoleted, obfuscated? I can't understand that, unless there is a source or force that wants everybody sick, everybody under control, and everybody kind of super sick or not vibrating at their highest dimension. So that's another thing that kind of grabs me now, the use of all these technical devices, all of which have nothing that's sold with it to protect you, and you have to get smart enough to begin to want to replace it yourself. Other than that, you're killing yourself and not even knowing. And, of course, people put these daggone cell phones in their smartphones in their pocket. Well, when you put it in your pocket, what have you done? You put it right next to your sex organ. So now you're radiating your sex organ. Women will even put it into their bra and their breast if they have big lobes and so on like that again. That means now they can get cancer because now these things are radiating right on the breast. And in the front of your body, of course, you have your thymus gland, which is your gland of youth. You have your thyroid gland, which is your gland that regulates dwarfism, and so it works very much with the pituitary gland. And women have three lobes on it. I know, I think we talked about this before. They don't realize they have three lobes in the thyroid gland. On the thyroid gland, which means that they require more iodine and more iron. And your thymus being your gland of youth. So now, when you put this thing into your bra, you're aging yourself. You can probably get breast cancer, and you're pickling your thyroid gland. And what's interesting about all of that, they didn't tell women to go get mammographies, which means that once or twice a year you're supposed to get raw radiation. And in many cases, the attendant will either use a diode mattress or a lead shield, give you a radiation, come back, and then tell you, okay, one of the views didn't come out. We need a lateral view. You have to take some more. You do that like this, and then you carry around, you will have breast cancer. You will have enlarged growth. You will be cutting down your usefulness because you're picking your thymus gland and the thyroid gland, of course, meaning three lobes. They now start giving you artificial iodine. The best thing they can give is potassium, mostly maybe the sodium, and these kind of things also are detrimental to the body because they age you. So I'm just looking around and saying everything we do almost is wrong. Sitting up in the bed with a laptop right in your lap, right on your sex organ, going to sleep at night talking on the phone, and it's radiating you all night long, coming together in a group and sitting around, everybody's radiating everybody else. It's just madness. And every time I turn around, there's always something bad that's happening with these new electronic gadgets.
Wow. So we definitely need to be more consciously aware of the fact that these electronics are all around us, and we need to purchase diodes and things to change the frequency of that, what's being emitted. That absolutely makes sense. One thing I do want to cover, and I know, you know, we only have an hour, I do really want to cover the history of the Earth because I find that so fascinating. And if you can, in just 10 minutes or so, just share with us, because it's so important that we know this is all by design. And really, what are we doing here? What is all of this about?
Wow, what's it all about, Elfie? Wow.
Yes.
Well, metaphysics teaches, first of all, that our planet is at least 4.6 billion years old. So we don't know anything about history. His story is one of those things started in 1900, again, with the University of Chicago and Sir Flinders Petrie and John David Rockefeller and all this stuff. History is ancient, and it said that our planet has been dominated by a race of aliens referred to as Drakons for 3.6 billion years. So it's been 4.9 billion years old, 3.6 billion years, they occupied it. We are the newcomers. And they were so advanced on this planet that they use it almost, I call it a zoo. They say it's a laboratory, whatever you want to call it. They have brought people here. They have made people here. They have crossed DNA here and still doing it right out in Dulce, New Mexico, each and every day. They have run this planet. They have brought many people here. And in fact, our own bodies that we now see are composed. They made these bodies up for us. Because if not, they wouldn't have made them so stupidly. As you know now, people use a phrase, that's a pain in the neck. Mm-hmm. Well, what they're now telling you is in the back of your neck, right, if you go to those 32 divisions on those lateral spinal cervical disc and stuff, right at the top there is what is called the reptile brain. And that's what they call it. And that's where it is. Right there at the top of your ladder of success, your 32 steps. And that reptile brain does only four things: fight, feed, flee, and fornicate. which means not only do they make these bodies before you can really get to using your brain, as they call it, with your left and right hemispheres and getting to your insectoid brain and your naughty brain, you have to go through the reptile brain, which fight, feed, feed, and fornicate. That's nothing. Any soldier can do that. Any person that's a robot can do that. So they not only design these bodies, they manipulated us for the longest. The original formation of this planet was said to be by the gods. And that's where they said they brought the gods from the four corners of the universe. And they all came together to show that they could now make creation much as the Creator had taught them to do. And it was said that these were star preparers, or what they call planet preparers, and they used certain laws that now, of course, seem kind of fascinating to us. The story was said that these were light bringers. These were the ones that were planet preparers, and they came. Now, this is before the Dracons. This is those who make planets and those who work through the universal creator's consciousness to do so. And it was said that they were told that there would be a new sun that would be coming up, and they had to get this planet ready before the sun shone. So they came here using dark matter and created a vortex, began to get energy fields together, and began to encrust using matter and made the planet. Supposedly these were the gods. These were the four gods from the four corners of the consciousness of youth, or the consciousness of matter. And that while they were constructing this daggone planet, especially the interior again, supposedly they began to see that this new sun began to burst forth. Well, they feared the sun because they knew that the sun limited your growth. And so they wanted to hurry up and get this planet ready, this last one, this special planet, before the sun shone. Well, supposedly when the sun began to form, they panicked and they ran. And they call it the abandoned ones here. The ones that were still inside building a shell for Earth and getting matter together were left because the gods that were with them ran off. And when they ran off, they condemned them to physicality and mortality. Before they would think a thing into existence. This is why if they thought about a tree, they would think it into a tree, but now that tree was part of their mind. So again, they used to say the spirit was in the tree, the spirit was in the rock, the spirit was in the water, because it took the energy of these spiritual creatures to bring matter into its lowest form and to bring about a planet like this one. Well, when they were left, they were called them the abanderos, the one that were left to the designs because they panicked in fear. And they had the hive together. They used what would be called the Merkaba. Mm. Mer means a means of travel, although mer and many times means water. It means really a means of travel, whether it be air, water, anything else. The ka and the ba are the spirit and soul. So they came together through the Merkaba to work on a lower dimension to see how the Creator makes planets. But when they ran, then they left some deserted because they had to use together, all together to use their minds. Those who were now mindless were now deserted, and now were now left to shift on their own accords, which was never met. The gods were not supposed to inhabit a planet like this. So now you had the spirit of the minds of these ones that were abandoned, along with whoever was supposed to be actually occupying the earth. And it's from that point on supposed to believe that that the earth was made into three parts, and one of the old names for earth was Terrestris. So you had interterrestris, terrestris, and extraterrestris, those that lived inside, those that lived on the surface, and those that lived in the sky. And this is what is called terrestrial, interterrestrial, and extraterrestrial. And it was said, since they had been left by their fellow compadres, that the Creator then decided, well, since that was there, that they would make the best use of this incarnation, or the best use of this being here. So it was said that he sent... Well, the he, she, whoever the Creator is, I don't look at it as a male or female, the mind of the Creator then sent to them a fetus. And this fetus was a very advanced fetus, and this fetus had instructions. And they were supposed to take this when this missile came here or whatever it was there, they were supposed to take it inside the earth to a special retainer area, a room that they built, and then open this up. So when they did so, supposedly, there was a vial that was sent with this one. And the vial contained melanin, and that this melanin was supposed to be, after the child began, the child was going to develop very quickly, they were supposed to insert this into the child some kind of way once the child reached a certain vibrational rate, not age, but a certain vibrational rate. And that was the introduction of melanin to the first person turned black on Earth called Seth. And it was said that Seth then was to rule the inner terrestrials, the terrestrials, and the extraterrestrials. And it's from that point on now, if you notice, now they talk about Superman. And they have Superman coming from another planet, with his father being a very advanced being, and that planet blew itself up, and Superman came to here with great powers, and his whole downfall was Krypton and all. I think I see parallels here, and I often wondered, who dreamed it up? Well, they didn't dream it up. They took away from the old text, from the Vedas, the Upanishads, the Popol Vuh, which taught this, and this is the way the ancients used to believe. So that pretty much is another way of looking how the Earth got started, still in three parts, but we've forgotten the one inside. We barely understand the one on this side, and we think of only aliens as coming in extraterrestrials. This planet has three different kinds of races, those that live inside, those that live on the surface, and those that live in the sky. So that's another way that metaphysics taught the coming of Earth.
Mm-hmm. How, then, do we break through this reptilian brain, and what is this awakening all about, and ascension? How do we break through so that we can go back to or become more of our true, authentic God self?
Well, we've been around for a very, 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 very long time. If you're talking about billions of years. So there have been comings and goings here, wars and things here, captures of moon, because at one time we didn't have a moon, all this kind of thing. It's been leading up to what's happening now, and that's one of the reasons for the prelude of why we're having all these earth changes now. Because now it's been decreed by the Universal Prime Creator, First Cause, that our planet stop being a kindergarten, stop being a home for Dracons to manufacture and do what they want to, like they're gods, and they're not gods. They're just some scientists who have misused people and misused matter. And that now we're going from kindergarten to grad school. And you've heard me say that. If anybody's heard any of my lectures over the last, I would say, that's 10 years, we're going from kindergarten to grad school. Mm-hmm. And that is now we're going to have to get recognition of what things are really like, not the lies we've been told in the zoo that we are, that we're going to have to either get ready for an ascension, as this planet has been granted the right to go, but even though the planet is going to become a grad school rather than a kindergarten, you still have to qualify. So the whole thing is now preparing yourself to qualify while still in the flesh to go forth and become a higher individual, or to die and be born again into this new dimension, or to die and flunk. So now you have choices. You can die. If you have a soul, you can't die, so you simply leave the body. You can try to stay with this planet and see if you're wise enough to manipulate matter yourself and get away from the genetic modified stuff and see if you're smart enough to make your own self stay useful or get your own understanding of consciousness. Or you just simply stay, and when the planet goes to a higher dimension, you wake up on a higher dimension. We have choices, and this is what a soul always has. So what you're seeing going on now is that preparation of ascension. What you're seeing going on now, it's a lot of people losing their bodies because they're not ready to ascend. You've got some that weren't even supposed to ascend, and you've got others here that will ascend. So now it's a matter of choices. What is interesting, one thing presents knowledge, and knowledge may bring power, but wisdom takes you the privilege of understanding that knowledge and using it wisely. That in lies the power of consciousness, the power of the Creator, and the power of First Cause. So that's now what you're seeing, people making choices. Whatever choices you make, that's what you're going to get. And billions of people, yes, are going to die. It's already happening. Last year, billions of people died. But understanding, every night you die. But you look forward to that death because you leave your body. You lose consciousness of the physical plane. But unfortunately, we don't remember the metaphysical plane because we call it a dream. We really are multidimensional souls and consciousness, and we're everywhere living multidimensions. But when we come back to this one, we forget the other. The thing is now to be able to vibrate faster, to use that melanin, to use that pineal gland, to cross over to get into the higher and all-knowing right brain and get away from the insectoid brain and the reptile brain and all of this. Toward that end, whatever you choose to think, eat, drink, and do is a choice you're making. We have that freedom.
How do we qualify then to move in the physical through this process? So eat what you're eating, drinking, raising your vibration, all of these things. It's about choices. So all of these things that we choose to do now, become consciously aware of, getting off of autopilot, all of these things, getting into the heart, all of these things will help us to do that if we want to do it in the physical. What else can we do?
What else would you want to do? If you are what you
is that enough?
Think and do, you did it. Yeah. If you control your thoughts and your actions through the thoughts on the physical plane, by what you think, eat, drink, and do, you are that victim or you are that graduate. It's according. And different people are doing different things. One of the reasons now where they had this big deal about cannabis is because the marijuana was used extensively all over this planet. I have a lot of movies, a lot of tapes, because I believe people should see things. It's one thing to describe it and they make a picture. It's another thing to see a picture. I like to make a picture. Too many people want to see pictures. So I have a whole film on cannabis. Why it really was something that should have been used all over. It grew all over the planet, different forms of it. But they took it away simply because it was a way of releasing the body to the soul and remembering. It was a way of letting you take away pain. It was a way of letting you go to the etheric worlds and so on like that. And it's very interesting because on the street in major cities, you could always get dope. You could always get cannabis. But what happened was they would get you the drugs, if you would, and many cases are brought in by the so-called lawgivers and stuff, because as a gang member, you can go out and get a gun, you can go out and get you some reefer, you can get everything you want. How? You go get it. They can get guns and cartridges for the gun and clips. You go out and get it. That means that the law is being, they're being guided by lawyers or people, not when I say lawyers, lawgivers. Cops bring them in, everything else happens. Everybody knows that. It's a big black market under there. Now, they can get it and you can't. But what do? They get this reefer or this marijuana, and they taint it with heroin. Well, heroin, for some people, it will drive them out of their mind. Heroin, for a black person, it makes them get like on the nod. It makes them kind of in and out of their spirit body, and it's that. But everybody falls victim to Lysergy to Heldamine, what they want to call now crack cocaine. Crack cocaine is hell. Anybody can be. Once you get that in, you're a monster. You lost it all. Well, it's now because they want you to have that, because they want you to lose a certain part of your population, because some of the souls coming in now are old souls. And rather than let them, and it means, again, that these Dracons still have control of the government, they still have control of the officials, and they're called the Illuminati. And they're the ones fighting against the Ascension. They're the ones bringing in the dope and the drugs. They're the ones that's always starting the wars, because during wars, people can disappear and stuff. You don't even question it. They're the problem. And this is why now people are waking up to that. There is an awakening going on, and people are making harsh decisions about what government is, about what real law is, universal law you hear people use. It's because these souls coming in now are awakening. And you cannot stay here without an awakening. So a lot of people are going to leave. A lot of people are going to kill people and be doomed to live their lives and their lives too. It's going to be a mess. But we're right in the middle of it. 2015 is when they start leaving. This year, you'll see young people moving objects. People will begin to use psychic power. They'll come to animals and talk to animals. A lot of things will begin to happen. But at the same time, you still have these fiends and these evil ones creating everything they can to make life a hell. That's because there's still a battle going on for this planet, because the Dracons don't want to leave, and yet they can't stay because they're bound to the fourth dimension, and this planet's going to the fifth dimension. So what you're seeing now is a house cleaning, a war going on in consciousness, and on the physical plane too.
So then, really to summarize, so we need to protect ourselves from all of the electrical stuff all around that they're bombarding us with. So diodes, what can we do to the physical body? Okay, we eat healthy food, we try to eat organic, we drink clean water. I know you have some wonderful products on your website. What would you suggest to help people to, since legal people can't get marijuana, what can we do to help with that process?
Everything on the website is geared for that. That's why I have so many products and why it strains me all the time to keep them. And I'm going to cut back on some of that, too. I'm starting to hoard things, and our group is, too, because some of the people that appreciate it, but the rest of the people are just waking up now. And it's kind of late to be waking up, but still. We have a diode on your for your cell phone. Mm-hmm. We have a diode for your computer. We have a diode for your microwave oven. We have a diode for your laptop. We have a diode for your TV set, plasma and high def. We have a diode for your washing machine. We have a diode for your MP3 player. There are diodes of all kinds. We have a diode. It's called a diode plaque, where you can put your food on it or put some of that marijuana I was talking about. You put it on the surface of that diode, even if it's laced with heroin, even if it's laced with crack cocaine. You put it on there for about 45 minutes. It will nullify the crack cocaine. It will nullify the heroin. And I say that one time because people don't seem to get that. We've been given gifts. the gifts we're given, people aren't aware of. And they try to get duplicates and stuff. The duplicates don't work. There are things now being given to people if you're awake, and if you want it bad enough, then you have to act upon it. You can get a diode mattress. And by the way, the people in Japan are burning like mad, so the price is going up. They're very expensive now. But now, if you get that mattress and you lie, you curl up on that mattress, it's 7 feet long by 3.5 feet wide, it will pull radiation out of your liver, out of your lymph system, as you sleep on it. So even if you got it, little by little, you can begin to get rid of it because your devices can do that.
We also have the Diomed. I love the Diomed. I actually have that. Explain that.
Oh, you got the Diomed. That's the one I was going to go into now. No, that was a Diode mattress. I was going to talk about the Diomed now. You want to talk about it since you have it?
Yes. No, everyone needs to hear this.
Oh, yeah. Well, the Diomed is the one that stands about 2 feet high. Shaped like a double inverted triangle. It looks like a double pyramid, one on top, one on the bottom. It has a stand, and it's equal to $35 in the base. That thing will protect you 60 yards around your home. That's what these daggone, I started to say the wrong word. Now, you should just go ahead and curb damn it's nothing. But these damn 200 and 175-foot towers with these things hanging off of it, those things are hell. Those things are there to set up a different frequency. They're set there for mind control. Birds used to crash every time they go through that field, and that field is constantly around you. They put it by hospitals. They put it by building complexes. They put it by schools. People are just walking by that thing. I said, don't you understand what you're doing to myself? You know, people are dumbed down. They don't even, I don't know why they think these things are up there. Those things can mess up your whole block. And now that's bad enough, but you can put a diode or Diomed and protect you from it. But now they're even using them. What's this other thing they got in there now? Smart meters. Now they got these daggone meters on the outside of your apartment or your building that are smart meters. Smart meters mean that they have these gadgets that they put onto it. First of all, when they put them on there, it's going to move faster. You're going to pay more money. Then you're paying for the installation or something that's going to hurt you. With that one, they can track the kind of energy usage in your apartment or in your home. They can tell when you're using a shaver. They can tell when you're using anything electrical, and it jumps faster, so you're going to pay more for that electrical current. And then they combine. Say you're in a 6-flat building or 16-flat building. They combine all those meters, and they can tell everything you're doing in your apartment. And they can even cut off the flow of it and alternate the current again, where sometimes you get blowouts and stuff like this. And they can take this in a whole block and get a reading for everybody that's home, when they're home, whether they're using a shaver, whether they're using an electrical machine, whatever they're doing. And they get a whole, therefore, understanding of whatever is happening in their building. As I say, these things now are getting diabolic, but you can still get these diodes. There's a diode to resist, and there's another thing. When I say diodes, most people think of an electronic diode, again, if you would. They're thinking of it as a capacitor, if you would. These things are not capacitors. They are more or less regulators. They keep things on a status quo, and they don't let the current overcharge or not. So it's not a diode. It's not an electronic diode. It's a diode that stops the radiation from being emitted or slows it down. I'm sorry, speeds it up to a frequency because it's the extra low frequencies that do the harm. So that's the difference between the diodes and some of these other things that you hear usages. It is not an electrode. It is a resistor. It is something that resists the ability to go too slow and speeds it up to a higher vibration, which is not as harmful for you.
Well, we are out of time. Would you please, Dr. Blair, give your website out?
It's www.themetacenter2.com. That's www.themetacenter, you push the number 2, don't spell it out, .com. And we have up there all, you can stay up there for days because all of the tapes that I have are there. And or you can call our center number. It's 708-422-6685. We have a 24-hour answering service for maybe 5 or 6 hours a day. We actually man it, and you can either go there or to the website. We have things that can help you. We have miracle cleaners. We have Miracle 2000. We have cleaners for the body. We have sex enhancers. We have memory enhancers. We have hair growers. We have all this stuff up there because with the basics, we work with the very basic cells to let the cells that are good continue to proliferate and to stop the cells that are bad from beginning to degenerate. It's a thing that we've done. I ask the Creator to help. And again, if you avail yourself of our website and you try our products, I think you'll be very pleased.
Absolutely. I want to thank you so much for your time. Hopefully we can do this again in the near future. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much. I've learned quite a bit. Until
next
time.
Thank you for having me. I hope your audience has also, and I thank you for giving me the privilege. And of course, if you go to our website, they can still register for this in-depth look at what this weather is all about and why it is this coming Saturday. Thank you.
Absolutely.
Once more,
thank you. Take care. There you have it, everyone. I want to thank you for listening in today. This has been an absolute pleasure. As you know, Affirmations for Living is all about affirming a better way of living. It's about discovering your true, authentic self. And boy, did we do that today. I am here to assist you, so please visit me on my website, affirmationsforliving.net today. Until next time, be blessed. Thank you. You've been listening to Affirmations for Living with Edwige. Join us again next week, Wednesday at 5 p.m. Pacific Time on the BBS Radio Network and visit my Facebook page, download my app, Awakened, and visit my website, affirmationsforliving.net. And remember, be the change that you want to see. Until next time, this is Reverend Dr. Edwige. Namaste.